won't cope with standing for any length of time. The other thing, of course, is I am 30 years older than Gerald last week. Gerald didn't have any notes, and I'm afraid I've got the full script because I know my memory is not good enough to do it that way, so. You know, I found it very difficult to select a psalm to speak about this morning, largely because I sort of missed out on 3 months' worth of psalms and parables while I was incapacitated. And as I read through the psalms with that in mind, I was struck by how often God's hand and especially his right hand are mentioned in the psalms. And I'm going to read a few portions which I'm sure are familiar to us, and they are on the screen. I'm going to read the references for those who are listening online. Psalm 37, verses 23 to 24. The Lord makes firm the steps of the one who delights in him. Though he may stumble, he will not fall, for the Lord upholds him or holds him up with his right hand. Psalm 63, verses 6 to 8. On my bed I remember you. I think of you through the watches of the night. Because you are my help, I sing in the shadow of your wings. I cling to you. Your right hand upholds me. Psalm 139, verse 5. You hem me in before and behind, and you lay your hand upon me. In fact, it says behind and before, but it's the same thing. Again, Psalm 139, 7 to 10. Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go up to the heavens, you're there. If I make my bed in the depths, you are there. If I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there your hand will guide me. Your right hand will hold me fast. Psalm 145, verses 14 to 16. The Lord upholds all who fall and lifts up all who are bowed down. The eyes of all look to you, and you give them their food at the proper time. You open your hand and satisfy the desires of every living thing. And our readings speak of God's hand. And I'm going to read Psalm 139, 5 to 6 again. You hem me in, behind and before, you have laid your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me, too lofty for me to attain. Or as the message puts it, this is too much. It's too wonderful. I can't take it all in. And it is, isn't it? That God, who created the universe, has his hand on you and on me. Could we have the hand of God? It's up. Good. Those are such encouraging verses, aren't they? We love them. And the writers of the Psalms found it really difficult to describe their great God. And the only way they could do it was to anthropomorphize him. It's a long word, but it means describe him in human terms. But it was only when Jesus, the manifestation of God in human form, came that we could truly appreciate and understand the true nature of God. Jesus' hands, hands that flung stars into space and yet to cruel nails surrendered, as we sing in the hymn, The Servant King. Jesus' hands, tiny hands of a vulnerable baby, the rough hands of a carpenter, gentle, healing hands, dirty hands writing in the mud, hands breaking bread, hands picking ears of corn in the fields, hands washing feet, hands touching the so-called unclean. And this morning I'm going to speak about God's hand, obviously, but through different stories, mainly through the life of Jesus himself. So firstly, God touches us when we are confused and frightened. Some of you may have heard this story before. It comes from a well-known Christian writer that I'm very fond of, Jennifer Rees Larkham. who used to foster children. These children already had problems before she took them in, and many had been so badly treated that they found it very difficult to trust adults. I'm sure that John and Faith, having fostered children in the past, will understand this. Let me tell you what she says, Jennifer Rees Larkham. These are in her words. David had been regularly tied to his bed for 16 hours at a stretch. His body was covered with bruises and festering sores. And the way he cowered away when I tried to touch him was heartbreaking. I wondered if he'd ever learn to trust me. He'd never seen the sea, so when we took all the children for a day at the beach, he became rigid with terror at the sight of the waves rolling towards him. And suddenly, I felt a cold, clammy hand slip into mine. All day, he clutched my hand tenaciously, refusing to let it go. By the afternoon, his confidence had grown enough for him to run with me through the sandy puddles left by the retreating tide. His little legs had never been given the chance to run and jump before, so he often stumbled. "You won't let me fall, will you?" he would say anxiously. "Keep hold of my hand, promise." That day changed him. Gradually, he became a normal, happy child. But it was the action of grabbing my hand that began our relationship. God longs for us to grab his hand like that whenever we feel afraid, lonely, or confused. And she finished the story with two beautiful verses from the Psalms. Psalm 63, verse 8 says, "My soul clings to you, your right hand holds me up." Psalm 37:23 says this, "If the Lord delights in the man's way, he makes his steps firm. Though he stumble, he will not fall, for the Lord holds him up with his hand." God touches us when we are confused and frightened. Secondly, God touches us where we are when we feel vulnerable. This second story speaks of Jesus' hands, rough carpenter's hands, and yet there was nothing rough about the way that Jesus dealt with people. You know, as we get older, our hearing is one of the things that begins to cause us problems. I know that for some, hearing aids can even make the problem worse if there's a lot of noise around in the background. And it can become very confusing and frightening in a crowded and noisy place. I wonder if you remember the story in Mark's Gospel when Jesus met a deaf man. One assumes that this man had been deaf from birth because he was hardly able to talk at all. And I'm sure he felt confused and frightened as he was dragged to Jesus by his friends. His friends asked Jesus to place hands on him, and of course they wanted to see a miracle of healing. How annoyed they must have been when Jesus took their deaf friend off, away from the noisy, cheering crowd, to a quiet place alone. But Jesus knew exactly what he was doing. He knew what a shock it would be for this deaf man to suddenly hear all that noise, all the noise of the crowd. He would have been terrified. And so rather than startle him, Jesus used his hands to communicate what he was going to do by using sign language. He put his fingers in the man's ears and he touched the man's tongue and he looked up to show him that he was praying. And he said just one word, "Ephphatha, Ephphatha," which would have been easy to lip read. And it meant, "Be opened." Jesus had used his rough, suntanned hands oh so gently to touch this man just where he needed them. and he brought healing. Mark tells us that the man's ears were opened, his tongue was loosened, and he began to speak plainly. In fact, he couldn't stop, and everybody was absolutely gobsmacked. Jesus touched this vulnerable man just where he was. We're all vulnerable in different ways and at different times, aren't we? But God knows exactly how we feel. And he touches us just at our point of need with love and understanding and gentleness. Jesus touches us where we are when we feel vulnerable. Thirdly, Jesus touches us in our messy lives. I wonder if you recall the story in Mark chapter 9 when a dad brought his very, very sick son to Jesus. It seems that he was possessed by an unclean spirit, which had manifested itself in a terrible way. Fits were throwing him into the ground. He was writhing in the filth, in his own dribble, maybe in his own urine, maybe his own vomit. You know, though all my family were nurses, if this had happened to me and I had seen somebody on the ground writhing, having a fit, I would have run a mile. It's not me. You see, it had happened to this boy since his birth, since he was very, very young. And he'd nearly died by being thrown into the fire or thrown into water by these fits. Jesus, of course, did cast out this unclean spirit, but he did much more than that. We're just told in Mark's gospel that Jesus took him by the hand and lifted him up. But I am sure that he did much more than that. Can we allow our imagination to fill the gaps as he wiped the lad's filthy mouth of dribble and vomit, as he smoothed his sweaty hair from his face, and as he spoke to this bewildered child gently and kindly? He got down into the dirt and the mess and he touched him. That's God. His hand touches us in our mess, whatever form that can take. Psalm 40, verse 2 says, he lifted me up out of the slimy pit, out of the mud, and out of the mire. He set my feet on a rock and gave me a firm place to stand. So God touches us in our messy lives, in whatever way they are messy. Fourthly, God touches us when we are feeling low or downcast. You recognize these verses in Psalm 42, which say, why, O my soul, are you downcast? Why are you downcast? When a sheep is downcast, that is, cast down, it cannot get back up onto its feet without help. It can't get onto its feet on its own. It needs the shepherd to reach down and lift it back onto its feet. What a lovely picture of God, our shepherd. 3 weeks ago, Rose asked us to sit with our eyes closed and our hands open on our laps before our time of open prayer. And as I sat with my eyes closed, I had a further picture of a toddler, maybe a baby, down on the floor, perhaps upset and crying, reaching its little arms up to mum or dad. Daddy, mummy, pick me up. Would the mum or dad stand back, ignoring the child? No. They'd bend down. They'd reach down with their hands and lift the little one back up onto their laps to give them a comforting cuddle, or maybe put them over their shoulder. And from that picture I had in those few brief moments, I thought of Jesus. I believe that Jesus really loved children. His disciples castigated him when he called children to him. And yet I believe that he was surrounded by children frequently. I don't believe he'd have just stood there or just sat there saying, come here, come here. I believe that he would have reached down to them. He would have picked them up. He would have cuddled them in his arms. He'd have enjoyed playing games with them. Yes, Jesus lifted children up gently in his rough carpenter's hands, just as God our Father lifts us up when we're low or downcast like a sheep on its back, unable to get up on our own. Is that where some of us are right now? Downcast? Feeling low? We have only to reach up and ask, Abba, Daddy, lift me up. Lift me up. Bless me as Jesus blessed children, laying his hands on them. We long for God to touch our children in that way, don't we? But we need his hand of blessing on our lives too, when we are low, when we are downcast. So God touches us when we're feeling low or downcast. And fifthly, it is the last one. God touches us with his overwhelming love through the bleeding hands of his son. I'm sure as I've gone through these stories that we can think of many, many more instances of Jesus' hands in the Gospels, times when he blessed, when he healed, he washed feet, he prepared meals and so on. I've just chosen a handful to show what a wonderful God and Father we have when we see his love shown to us through his son when he lived amongst us. But at the end of Jesus' life, his hands were smashed and bleeding on a cross of torture as God showed us what it meant to love us so much. And I'm sure we've seen pictures and paintings and perhaps watched films depicting Jesus' awful death. The weight of his body on his outstretched arms with those hands nailed to the cross, that crossbeam, the weight would have caused excruciating pain. Excruciating. Think of that word, ex, from crux, the cross. Sorry, a bit of Latin. Excruciating. That just tells you how much that word, excruciating, means. And yet, strangely enough, in the Gospels, there is no direct mention of Jesus being nailed. Isn't that amazing? Maybe it's because it would have been known as part of that terrible form of torture. In the Acts of the Apostles on the day of Pentecost, Peter speaks of Jesus being put to death by nailing him to a cross. Paul, in his Colossian letter, wrote that our sins were nailed to the cross. But I'm sure you'll remember that Thomas wasn't with the other disciples when Jesus appeared after his resurrection. Thomas said, when Jesus finally meets him, a week later, Thomas said this, "Unless I see the nail marks in his hands, I will not believe." He said that when the other disciples said that they'd seen Jesus. He wouldn't believe them. But when he did finally meet Jesus that week later, Jesus said, "Look, put your finger here. See my hands." And that was enough. That was enough for Thomas. He saw the immensity of what Jesus had done for him and for us, and he said, "My Lord and my God." It was beyond his understanding, and it's beyond ours, isn't it? How great the Father's love for us in allowing his Son to hang on that cross for us. In Isaiah chapters 52 and 53, it says, "His appearance was so disfigured beyond that of any man, and his form marred beyond human likeness. He was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. By his wounds, we are healed." We have a blank cross on the wall. Probably some of us are wearing a blank cross around our necks. I have in my hand a little blank cross made of olive wood. And we as Protestants prefer the cross without the figure of Christ. After all, he didn't stay there, did he? He rose from the dead. But we must never, ever forget those bleeding wounds, must we? For us. Jesus died a terrible, terrible death. And God touches us with his overwhelming love through the bleeding hands of his Son. I have chosen a song which expresses our response to what we've heard this morning. I believe it's 594. And it says, "When I feel the touch of your hand upon my life, it causes me to sing a song that I love you, Lord. So from deep within, my spirit singeth unto thee." And I've forgotten the rest. "You are my King, you are my God, and I love you, Lord." And that's our response to what Jesus did on the cross for us and what God continues to do as he touches our lives day by day.